a cent. It doesn't sound like much, but it could go a long way to fix our schools. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead on the show today, a closer look at the Duval Board of Education's proposed half a cent tax for schools. It would be used to repair the county's aging and, in some cases, crumbling school buildings. You can join the conversation now. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll talk to local author Wanda Duncan. Her poignant new memoir, Cracker Gothic, examines how a place, in this case, her hometown of Green Cove Springs, can heal a heart. All of that and more just ahead. But first this hour, the urgent push to pay for better school buildings in Jacksonville is being apparently kicked down the road. On Tuesday night, the Finance Committee of the Jack City Council voted to delay a referendum on a half-cent sales tax for schools to the fall of 2020. But the school board wants to hold a special election on this year. And in just about every other county in Florida, it's the school board, not the city council, who gets to decide this. We're beginning the hour with a closer look as we welcome Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Diana Green and School Board Chair Lori Hershey. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. Would you be willing to pay a half cent more in sales tax to shore up local schools? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And weigh in on Facebook as well. Board Chair Lori Hershey, let's begin with you. Why do you think the mayor and the city council want to defer a vote on this tax to 2020 rather than hold the special election this year?
I don't know that answer for sure. It is concerning the fact that our city seems to be fighting so hard against this effort to allow voters to weigh in. I'm concerned by some of the comments made during the Rules Committee, both by council members as well as some people who addressed the city council, that this may begin to really be more about the push to privatize public education in Duval County versus public schools.
Dr. Diana Green, do you agree with that? Is the real agenda to privatize more schools in Duval County?
I believe the agenda is forcing the school district into a box or a set of requirements that is not the call of the city council. The school board was elected to make those decisions, and this referendum is one of the decisions that our school board by law is allowed to make. Our goal is to support all public schools. It has been from the very beginning, the board has made it clear that there will be an opportunity for charter schools to participate or receive dollars through this half-cent sales tax if it is approved by the voters.
And let's explain what the money raised from this proposed tax would be used for. Why is it needed?
Well, our main obligation is to ensure that our students are in an environment where they are safe and it's conducive to teaching and learning. And that's what the plan focuses on. Safety and security, very high priority. But we also have to recognize that Duval County has the oldest school facilities in the state of Florida. And we must address those facilities. And we're doing it in two ways. We're doing it through consolidation, consolidating small schools into one and building a new school for those students that consolidation would be for. And two, addressing the facilities condition index, the major parts of a school that needs to be repaired and working. This plan is not about building new schools just wherever we want to build new schools. It's about building new schools where we have schools that are very old and deteriorating, and building new schools where we have growth. We have growth in Ms. Hershey's district, and we have growth in Ms. Joyce's district, and that plan addresses that by a new K-8 in District 7 and a new middle school for District 6.
And in addition to the growth, Board Chair Hershey, another aspect of this debate that's gotten a lot of attention is that some of these older schools don't even have working air conditioning. What about that?
You know, you would. It's troubling, isn't it, when we have schools that the AC is not working during testing. We have ceilings being held up by 2x4s. And I think that the public is supportive and recognizes the need for this half-cent sales tax. It's very frustrating that a state statute allows the school board to ask the local governing body, be it a commission or the city council, to place a referendum on the ballot for voters to decide. And that's really all the school board is asking. I feel like some of the questions and pressures and effort to delay requests to defer or withdraw the legislation are all attempts to sidetrack the basic role of the city council, which is the ask of the school board to please put this on a ballot for the voters to decide.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, only in Duval County is the school board's role being sidelined. You are duly elected officers. In other school districts around Florida, you have the authority to, without having to go head in hand to another elected body, put this kind of measure before the voters. Only in Duval County have we seen this kind of maneuver where the city's top attorney issued a binding legal opinion that essentially took your authority away. How upset are you about that?
Well, I wasn't pleased when the ruling came in the day we were working on our resolution, but we did acknowledge the fact that when we sent the legislation over, that based upon the opinion, shall did not mean shall, but whether and when. So if it could be on the ballot and when it could be on the ballot, due to the urgency and the fact that really by delaying this for a year, we talk about fiscal responsibility and taxpayer money. Putting it on a ballot for 2020 actually will cost the taxpayer dollars. We'll spend $6 million in taxpayer money to make repairs, and that will probably be more of a Band-Aid fix than a true fix.
Superintendent Green, are you concerned that the push to delay is a tactic to prevent the vote from happening at all?
Well, as the superintendent, I can only educate about the referendum. Our concern right now is how do we continue to provide the utmost high-quality education? And we're very fortunate that we have amazing administrators and teachers who will do that in spite of being in old facilities. And we're also very fortunate that we have a maintenance department. When the AC is not working, they are there on the spot, trying to get that air conditioning up, back up, running as soon as possible. But the issue we're facing is that our facilities are so old that when something breaks, many times we have to do a special order or customization. Fishware, beautiful elementary school. The wall separates from in a classroom, and that classroom is being held together by, as Ms. Hershey said, 2x4s is holding up that wall. Fortunately, we are working on that school this summer, and we're probably close to $1 million to ensure that those classrooms that have separated, that we can pull them back. But that only fixes that issue. It does not recognize that Fishware is, I think it's almost either it's close to 100 years old or 100 years plus old, and it will continue to have issues that we will have to address.
At this point, given that the Finance Committee of the Jacksonville City Council has voted to delay this referendum until 2020, what is your play now? Will you still try to rally the public to pressure the City Council to approve this referendum for 2019? Or are you looking ahead to next year?
Well, right now we are still focused on the master's facilities plan as it is in my recommendation. We will a school board workshop on Monday to discuss the master's facilities plan. And if the board has any recommendations or adjustments to that plan. So we are moving forward. We will continue our website, ourduvalschools.org. I encourage community members to visit that website. One, it has our plan on the website. It also, you can see the portables, which we haven't even talked about, about 500 portables that we're trying to remove off our campus, which this plan will address.
The half-cent sales tax would help you educate fewer kids in portables.
That is correct.
Okay. Let's go to some calls now for Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Diana Green and Duval County School Board Chairwoman Lori Hershey. Where do you stand on their push to put a proposed half-cent sales tax referendum before you, the voters, this November? The Jacksonville City Council is moving to have this vote delayed a year. Give us a call. Sandy is in Riverside. Hi, Sandy. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm 82 years old, so I don't have a dog in the fight. No grandchildren in school even. But I'll tell you one thing. I want those kids to have the best, safest education they can have, because 20 years down the road, if I am still around and call for an appliance repairman or car repairs or the police or the fire department or a teacher or a social worker or a doctor, or I can go on and on. That's who's going to show up, are these kids that we're educating today. And if we don't give them the best education we possibly can, ooh, are we ever going to pay for it?
Okay, thank you, Sandy. That's Sandy in Riverside, and Lori Hershey. She articulates the case for folks who don't have kids in the school system, why you're asking them to support this proposal.
I would like to ask Sandy if she'd be willing to do a commercial for us, because that was wonderful. I think there's a marketing campaign right now. I think that's really look, if you look around the state, and even if you look around the country, you will see cities that have decided to invest in public education, to support their local public education, are cities that are flourishing, cities that are successful. When we have Orange County, where Disney World is, that passes a half penny sales tax to care for their school facilities, and you see how well they're prospering. I just think what Jacksonville could be like if we chose to invest in our public education.
Again, that brings up the fact, Dr. Green, that Duval County is an outlier. We have the highest percentage of charter schools in the state, and nowhere else in the state will you see the kind of politics around this that we're seeing right now. Even in neighboring St. John's County, a right-leaning county, voters enthusiastically voted in more money for local school repair and construction. And so I want to ask you a deeper question. What's really going on here? What's really going on here, you think?
Well, we are at a crossroads in public education. The whole, initiative of charter schools was to introduce competition. And as a superintendent, I have no issue with competition. But the definition of competition is where two teams or two interests are competing. It is not where you decimate one group and try to only enhance the other.
Do you believe forces in this community, elected officials and business leadership, are trying to decimate public education? Do you believe that?
I believe that there are individuals who feel that charter schools is the only way to go, and that we need to bring more charter schools to eliminate or force the school district to continue to consolidate schools. That is not an opportunity for true parental choice.
But do you believe that there are power structures in this community that want to go further than that? That do you believe the perception some have, which is that the real agenda is to dismantle public education as we know it?
I believe the agenda really is to make it more difficult for traditional public schools to be successful. And as the superintendent, my number one priority is to continue to support our traditional public schools. And as I talk to the principals every month when I'm at principal meetings, I continue to tell them we need to be the choice. Parents should have that right to choose whatever school they feel best suits their child's academic needs. But at the same time, we are also here for community needs. Our facilities are used for recreation after hours. Our facilities are used for hurricane shelters. So we're more than just the educational arm of our community. We are also there to support our community for their needs. And charter schools don't have that requirement.
Lori Hershey, speaking now for listeners out there who have kids in charter schools, what about their perspective? They perceive that charter schools do not get adequate funding.
So I'm a good person to ask that question. I have the most charter schools in my district. I have 8 charter schools in my district and 10 traditional schools in my district, and I will soon have 9 charter schools in my district. So my district has embraced charter schools. They are public schools. And I think the fact that our school board, unlike many other school boards in the state, have openly acknowledged, as well as I believe Dr. Green previously mentioned, that we are willing to share funds with charter schools. I think that that's something that's very important to acknowledge, is the fact that we recognize that they are public schools, that they have safety requirements like we have that are increasing through the Marjory Stoneman Douglas. And we certainly embrace charter schools as public schools. But here's the thing. Of all the schools in my district, I don't have any charter schools that are 100 years old. I do have a school that's 75 years old. And so we're talking about immediate facility needs. And keep in mind, too, that many charter schools are not owned outright. Many charter schools use space that is leased.
Lots of calls meanwhile. Let's go to Tim at UNF. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. I want to say that I absolutely support the half-cent sales tax. I would even more enthusiastically support a full-cent sales tax because that's what we need. But, of course, we have to consider what will actually pass. I'm very concerned, of course, that what is going on with our local government is a power grab by, unfortunately, some short-sighted, profit-minded individuals. There is a lot of money that goes through public education, and they see, if I can stick my finger in this pot, which can be executed through charter schools, then I and some people that I'm friends with can make an awful lot of money. The underfunding of public schools has gone on in Duval County for a very long time. The most notable was with Superintendent Ish Brandt in the 1950s and 60s. Because he wanted to get reelected, he served 4 terms as an elected superintendent. Our schools were disaccredited in 1964, and that was the number one reason, was that the schools were underfunded. If you look at any map of growth in Northeast Florida, all of the new high schools in Northeast Florida, except for Atlantic Coast, in the past 20 years, have all gone up in St. John's and Clay County, right on the border of Duval. People want to live near Jacksonville, but they don't want to send their kids to our schools, unfortunately. I have a child here in Duval County, but people would rather live and have their kids go to school in St. John's and Clay and live close enough that they can enjoy the resources of Jacksonville and Duval County. There are a lot of conservative-minded politicians, of course, and they want to keep taxes low. Everybody knows that. But if you look at, like you already mentioned, Clay and St. John's County, also conservative communities, but they have funded their schools. Look at any of those campuses. They are very well done. I'm a professor of education, and I have walked personally into every middle and high school in the 4 Northeast Florida counties, and there is no question that Clay, St. John's, and Nassau's are substantially better on average than what we have at Duval. And just look at where the funding has come from and what problems we've had in the past, and that tells
you
pretty much what's going on.
Thank you, Tim, from UNF. He's right. He knows his local history, Dr. Green. The schools were disaccredited in the 1960s, and the poor funding was leading the pack as to what caused that outcome. And so let me ask you, throw out to you an email from a listener. We're getting lots of emails about your proposed funding mechanism. Nancy emails the show, "Why are we only talking about a sales tax increase? That's the most regressive tax to cover these costs. Poor people get hit much harder. Can you explain why you are being forced to propose a sales tax rather than another way another mechanism to pay for these costs?
By statute, school districts for capital needs can only bring before the voters a half cent sales tax. For that reason, also, we can only ask for up to a half cent. So the question about, or the comment about, I wish we would go for a penny, school districts, the maximum is a half cent. And that those dollars can only be used for capital needs.
Jeff in Riverside emails the show, I understand the school property tax assessment on non-homesteaded properties has no limits on annual increases. Can you use that revenue source?
No, we cannot. The state of Florida actually dictates how much we are allowed to levy, and it's called required local effort. And for capital needs, that maximum, or it's not even a maximum, it's 1.5 mils, and that is set by the state of Florida.
Could I weigh in? I had a conversation with a city councilman, and I did learn, Dr. Green, that the city council actually has the ability to increase that local effort if they so chose. But we see that that has not been offered to us.
And let's also point out that there are competing polls about this matter. The Jacksonville Public Education Fund put a poll in the field finding more than 70% of Duval County residents support the half-cent sales tax for schools. A consultant affiliated with the mayor put out a poll showing softer support. What about those competing polls?
I tend to believe the Jacksonville Public Education Fund. There was also a poll done by the Community Foundation, and all of those polls continue to show strong public support for this effort to invest in public education in Duval County.
Lots of calls meanwhile as we speak with Superintendent Diana Green and Duval School Board Chair Lori Hershey. What are your thoughts? Todd is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Todd. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I was at the city council meeting and spoke out in favor of the half cent tax. I think we need to look at this in a little deeper way. This is happening across the country. Public schools are under attack. You know, here our kids are sweating in the summer because of the lack of air conditioning. In the north, they're wearing down coats in their classrooms because they can't get heat. This is about race and class. This is an attack on poor Black, Hispanic, and white kids, our children. And I think we need to address that. And in a deeper way, we need to look at the heart of this issue.
And let me ask you, as a follow-up, Todd, why do you see this through the lens of race? Why do you feel that the push for more charter schools is tied to deeper racial divisions in America? And I'm just pushing back on you to explain that, since I know some listeners would disagree. What do you mean by that more deeply?
Well, across the country, our cities are decaying. The white middle class, as we know historically, has fled the inner cities. Some of them are being gentrified now. But overall, who is left in the inner cities? Well, poor folks, Black folks, brown folks, and poor whites. And we pay, you know, we have to take on the brunt of being able to educate our kids, being able to create an environment and a society that has basically turned their back on us. You know, it's not enough time to talk about this, but the deeper problem here is our economic system in this country. It's the economic system in this country, okay, that is falling apart and that is demanding more and more and more from working people. The rich in this city are not going to have to pick up that tax. Poor people are going to have to pick it up because it's a sales tax. I voted in favor of it because we have to do something. Raines High School, for instance, the football team, they don't even have adequate helmets, I've been told. What could happen to our kids in a situation like that?
Okay, so I take all your points, issue. Todd. I take all your points. Let me just add the caveat that the money, if it was raised, would go toward districts or go-to buildings across the district, some of which are not in as bad of shape. But I want to ask both of you to react to his comments.
So,
Lori.
So first, I would say there have been papers written and research done recently indicating that school choice is actually a civil rights issue of our time because of the fact that with choice, for example, with charter schools, they don't have to provide transportation. When a charter school such as the School of Hope, IDEA is the one for the state of Florida, when they come in, they can locate within a 5-mile radius of the school that they're coming to replace or support for students when a school's been closed. So when you can be within a 5-mile radius in Jacksonville and not provide transportation, and you're not even required by the state of Florida to service the students from the school that was closed, nor even the same grade level, I think that that's where some of those concerns mm-hmm. can come from. But we do have about 49% to 50% of our budget, I believe, from this project is directed towards our urban core, if that's correct, Dr. Green.
Dr. Green.
Yes, it's 45%. You're close. 45% of our budget for if we were to receive the half-cent sales tax is dedicated for the urban core. We've recognized that there have been some inequities, and this referendum, the goal is to remedy that situation so that students can attend their neighborhood school if that is their desire. But again, we are still a district of choice, and we are strong believers in parental choice. But we as a district, when our parents want to choose a magnet program, we provide transportation so that students, no matter where they live, have access to that program. But we also want to make sure that they have access to high quality schools right there in their neighborhood.
On our Facebook page, Laura writes, yes, on the half penny sales tax. I would even vote yes on a full penny. Public education is the basic building block of a free society, she writes. And meanwhile, lots of calls still holding. Let's go to Mike in Arlington. Hi, Mike. Good morning. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm going to tell you, I'm an engineer by training and was educated in the public school system and know the value of public schools. But my biggest question is that if this issue with regards to maintenance is a 30-year time frame, what has the school board done in this past 30 years to try to address this problem? It's been deferred and deferred and deferred. You're talking about funding mechanisms. You've had 30 years to try and get this fixed. And the question that I put to you is that with this half-penny sales tax, it's a bandage on a very big mortal wound for the school district. And I want to hear how this isn't going to be a patch upon patch upon patch.
Yeah.
And that the district is moving towards developing a funding mechanism that works for them. And I'm not, and I know you're bound by charter, but the law can be changed.
It's thanks, Mike. Like, yeah, I hear your points, and let's get an answer to that. Lori Hershey.
Well, I can tell you that actually the conversation about facilities with the school board began in 2002. We did go back and look at some old minutes. But what has happened over the years is we've had a slow peeling away of dollars that we can use for capital needs. We've also had to now share PICO dollars with charter schools. We used to split it. Now the charter schools get PICO dollars. So what has happened over the years is we've had less and less revenue to address our capital needs. Really, the biggest question as to why hasn't this been done sooner is that it's very rare for a superintendent to dare to bring a bold plan such as this. And it's even rarer to have an alignment of school board leadership that says, we will dare to take the political risk and go out for this referendum. Most boards, particularly in Duval County, would tend to eschew a pursuit of something that would be a sales tax increase. So I think that there are multiple reasons that have causes stripping away of dollars, as well as the sheer political will of both a superintendent and a school board to tackle this issue head on.
We thank you both for your time. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Diana Green, Duval County School Superintendent, Duval County School Board Chair Lori Hershey. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
and much more still ahead on the show. Up next, Cracker Gothic, a memoir author Wanda Duncan describes as a glimpse into weird Florida with a little heartache and love thrown in. As we turn the spotlight to Green Cove Springs next, this is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
GCT's podcast, What It's Like, tells the stories of local people.
I delivered a stillborn baby. The doctors always let you hold them, let you see them, and then they take them away and you never see them again.
Did you feel illegal?
You know, this word is tossed around so loosely.
I did. I kind of felt shame sometimes.
Take a listen to What It's Like wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
Life can be messy, but when the bomb's ticking down, the dam's breaking, or Jimmy's in the well, you don't have time to do things the right way. Now, on the Next Snap Judgment, you need a quick fix. Quick fix. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Saturday afternoon at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Wanda Suttle Duncan is a seventh-generation Florida cracker. But when she left the state at the age of 18... she left behind her small rural hometown of Green Cove Springs. She thought forever. But when Wanda returned for some visits to care for her aging mom, she started to see the town with new eyes. A place of Eden-like natural beauty, unchanged in the decades she'd been away. In the process of reconnecting with that town of Green Cove Springs, she discovered the power of a place to heal a heart. Wanda Suttle Duncan shares her journey in her new memoir, Cracker Gothic, and she joins us now for a look inside. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's the best title of a book ever, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks.
And it explains your background. So you're a seventh-generation Floridian. How did that affect your childhood growing up in Green Cove Springs?
Well, just being in a small town like that and having long generations in that area, and it was just sort of normal, you know, that mm-hmm. that was just the way things were, and you kind of think that the rest of the world is like your world when you're growing up in a small town, and it's really not.
Is that why you decided to leave at the age of 18?
Yes. I wanted to see the world. I knew there were bigger opportunities out there, and I thought, oh, I'm going to shake the dust of this little tiny town off of my feet and go somewhere else and experience the world in a bigger way.
Which you did. You were gone for a while, right?
Right. Decades. My entire adult life, yes. Left and went away to college, married, stayed gone other than coming back for visits to family, of course. Pretty much stayed away.
But then your mother's illness brought you back to Green Cove Springs. Were you reluctant at first to come back and spend time there, or did you feel that you had to?
I by that time, I knew I very quickly enjoyed coming back. I saw the value in that tiny town even at that point. And when I started coming back, it was almost immediately sort of a relief. It was a peaceful place. So I appreciated it pretty quickly, I'd say.
What is it about Green Cove Springs that sort of made you appreciate the magic of an old place, a place that hasn't really changed too much with modernization?
That's right. And I'm sure that's going to change soon. But it's a beautiful small town. It has a long history, being a town that's right on the river, and it has that historic Sulphur Spring. When I would come back 10 years ago, when I started coming back to care for my mother, there was so little that had changed. You know, there were still people living in the houses that had lived there when I was young, or family members, and the streets, the buildings, the geography of the place just felt like I had never left. Things seemed like they did in the 1960s in a lot of ways. And I guess it's that small, protected environment, a small town that on the one hand has sort of been bypassed, both in the 1800s when the railroad bypassed Green Cove and it stopped. It was no longer a resort. I think the 20th century, same kind of thing happened again. The naval base closed down. All of the growth was in other places, Jacksonville or St. Augustine, further south. And it just somehow retained that very quiet, small town feel. And I sensed that immediately as I started coming back. It was pretty immediate that I appreciated it.
It's sort of a forgotten and quirky place, and in a weird way, being overlooked has been a blessing for it, for people who like its ambiance.
That's right. That's exactly right. People are finding it, and new businesses are opening, and I think there's certainly more of an appetite now for small towns and quirky little places. I think people are looking for that now as perhaps something different from living in a bigger city or a suburban setting. I think there's something about the charm that's appealing to people.
Now, you suffered another tragedy after coming back to Green Cove Springs as your mom was ill with dementia. Your husband's suicide. Can you tell me about that?
Right. And I don't talk a lot in the book about it because I actually started these essays before he died. So I was coming back to Green Cove Springs to help with my mom, and his suicide occurred during that time. And I was fortunate at that time to work at a place that enabled me to just go. They said, you just go down and stay with your mom. You can stay for months if you need to. You can work remotely. So I was feeling very much like I was living in a fishbowl back in North Carolina, where everyone was and where my husband and I had raised our children. So the opportunity to just come to Green Cove Springs and stay for an extended stay rather than a week here or a long weekend, that was what was so healing for me, was just a quiet, faraway place where I could go to the grocery store and not feel like people were looking at me and talking about me. You know, whether or not that's real, it felt that way to me. So it was nice to have a place to go away and sort of settle back into, you know, a comfortable place.
Sure. Now, the title of your book is Cracker Gothic. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because people understand the term Florida cracker and the history behind that term.
Right.
The term cracker also sometimes is a pejorative, an insult.
Exactly.
Toward white people, really.
Right.
And so tell me about
the title, Cracker okay. Gothic.
Okay. There, and I certainly am aware of that. There are many definitions for the word cracker. It implies a bigoted, racist person. People will say, oh, it comes from the old Florida cowboys where their whips were cracking as they rounded up cattle. There are people who point back to Shakespeare because in the play King John, there's a mention of a character at being a cracker, a braggart, an arrogant person. I tend to subscribe to or claim for myself the definition of that word as someone who is a descendant of one of the old pioneering families in Florida. I understand that there are all kinds of definitions for that word, but what I claim for myself is I'm a Florida cracker because I'm descended from a long line of Florida families and families that worked the land and have humble beginnings and humble roots. That's sort of just what I cling to.
Yeah. It is fascinating to look at the origins of words. Historians that have studied at NPR reported on this. It goes all the way back to Shakespearean England. The origin of the word cracker, it was an insult originally, but then it came to describe Celtic immigrants, Scotch-Irish people who came to America from the old world, and they settled into the Carolinas and Appalachia, Florida, Georgia. It goes back a long way. Mm-hmm. And so you've kind of reclaimed that word.
Right, right.
With cracker gothic. And right. So are you still in Green Cove Springs?
I am.
You're still living there.
Right. And after my mother passed away, I sort of shifted things in my life a bit, and I'm actually in the house that she owned when I was taking care of her. So I still do a lot of traveling. My children and my granddaughter are elsewhere, and so I kind of bounce around. But my home base right now is in Green Cove Springs.
And you plan to stick around?
Yes.
Well, you're having a book signing tomorrow in Green Cove Springs and another one this weekend at Chamblin's in Jacksonville.
That's correct. Tomorrow night is at Red's Wine Bar on Walnut Street in Green Cove Springs from 6 to 8. And then I'll be at Chamblin's Uptown Saturday from noon until 4.
Two opportunities to meet First Coast author Wanda Suttle Duncan and her book Cracker Gothic. Get a copy of it. And also, if you've never been down to Green Cove Springs, as Wanda pointed out, there's some stuff happening there. So you might want to make the trip to meet Wanda and also check out the town itself, because it is starting to get discovered, which I bet not everyone in Green Cove Springs is happy about, right?
That's right.
But it's worth the trip to see all that. So Wanda Suttle Duncan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And her website, by the way, is crackergothic.com. And in a moment, we've got a sneak peek of Void on Vinyl, Volume 2. It's their second compilation of local music acts. We'll take a listen ourselves right after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Tony Hale is known for playing neurotic characters like Buster in Arrested Development and Gary in Veep. Now he has a new role in the latest Toy Story movie.
That's how they pitched him to me. They're like, you know, we have this Spork who has a little bit of a neurotic energy, and we thought of you. And I was like, check.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Next time on The World, the death of Jamal Khashoggi. The CIA concluded last year that the Saudi crown prince ordered his murder. Now a UN expert is calling for further investigation,
including of the highest level of the government of Saudi Arabia, that includes the crown prince.
UN investigator Agnes Callamard tells us what she's learned so far on The World.
This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The Trump administration's family separation policy sparked a national outcry.
Let the children go!
Tearing children from the arms of their mother and their father.
This is not America. This is not our country.
What we're doing as a nation is inflicting enormous harm.
I'm Ari Shapiro. 1 year on, we'll revisit that moment and look at how it's changed the debate about immigration in America. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Weeks after a military coup overthrew President Omar al-Bashir, optimism in Sudan has been replaced with bloodshed. America has condemned the violence in Khartoum, calling it abhorrent. What's being done now to stop history from repeating itself? Can the revolution be saved? Who is standing up for Sudan? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, our friends at Void Magazine are at it again. They are dropping Void on Vinyl, Volume 2. It's their latest all-local music compilation, and you can get the music and a lot more this Saturday night at Nighthawks. Here now with a preview, we welcome Matt Shaw, Void Editor-in-Chief. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Also here, Josue Cruz. He's lead singer of the Jacksonville-based 10-piece Afro-Cuban salsa band, LPT. Hey, good morning.
Buenos dias.
Good to have you. You guys are going to be headlining at the Big Bash at Nighthawks this Saturday, but let's talk about this album, Matt, Void on Vinyl. Void on Vinyl, Volume 2.
Volume 2, yeah.
So why do another one of these?
Well, the first one came out, I think, like 9 months ago, and we had plans to make a Volume 2, but it kind of came together really quickly because just fitting, you know, enough local artists. On the first one, we had a bunch of bands on the cutting room floor, and then, you know, every month I get, you know, emails or hear a new band out in town, and so we just had a ton more, and so we're already, you know, looking at Volume 3.
We just listened to a cut from our own intern Al Pete. On the band. He's
a
on the album.
A local legend. Yep. In the hip hop community.
You've got some other local bands like the Sun Bears, Dark Horse Saloon, Focus People. How did you choose the cuts for this?
We try to be really to make sure that it's as eclectic as possible and a reflection of the local music scene. And so, you know, we want to include all the scenes that are kind of blowing up on their own. We want to choose bands from each one of those. We don't want to just pick one genre and stick to that because there's so much music in Jacksonville right now.
And vinyl is really having a resurgence. What's it like to put an album out on vinyl? What's been the reaction to that?
I think in this local market, it's still an emerging platform. But I think around the country, like we're a little bit behind that. But people are excited to try it out, and everybody who has a record player at this point who's given it a spin has enjoyed it. So good feedback so far.
Very nice. Okay, Josue, tell us a little bit more about your band LPT. You're going to be headlining at the Void on Vinyl party this Saturday night. What can we expect?
You can expect a classic LPT show, which is high energy, lots of dancing, lots of sweating, and that's what LPT brings every time. As a 10-piece orchestra, obviously, you know, we have a good amount of dynamic on stage. We have, I think, the best musicians in Northeast Florida on stage at the same time, and it's going to be a fun night. Void has been such a supporter of LPT and local music that the opportunity to go out there and close the night out is an honor.
you were on the first Void on Vinyl release, some of your music.
Correct, yeah.
And so now this is a chance for people to hear you guys perform live.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in support of an awesome project. Those folks that heard us on, you know, volume one, which, you know, we had a great reception to come out and actually hear a collection of folks that are on volume one and volume two and to get LPT out there, you know, it's been fun.
Okay, so the album release party, the party itself is Saturday night at Nighthawks.
Yeah, doors at 5, and then the music kicks off at 6, opening up with The Black Toilet, who's track 2 on volume 2. The end of the night will be LPT, as we said, but Al Pete's performing. We have Giella, Love Culture, The Young Step. There's 8 acts in total, so we're packing in a lot of music into that time frame, so it's going to be fun.
Come on out to Nighthawks on Roosevelt this Saturday night for Void on Vinyl Volume 2. You can pick up this vinyl release for just $10 with paid admission. Get your tickets now. Thanks so much.
It's a good deal.
It is a good deal.
It's going to be a party.
And it's going to be a fun party. So Matt Shaw, editor-in-chief of Void Live, Josue Cruz, lead singer of LPT. Thanks, guys, for being here. Have fun.
Thanks so
Melissa.
We'll close with another cut off Void on Vinyl, Volume 2. It's Nicholas Edward Williams. This is Happy Life. That's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is the scintillating Heather Schatz. The serene and majestic Michelle Corum is our director. If you have questions and comments, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, we'll look at all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great day and enjoy the music.
Good friends will tell you you've only got one shore. And if you have a happy wife, you've got a happy life. Don't forget it. You regret it, then you burn like the hellfire. Now, if you can't take the time for your lover's needs, then you're sleeping on the couch tonight, Lord, you're counting sheep. But there's a handbook you can reference to. Every man knows it, he just forgets what to do. There's a few golden rules that God's bestowed upon us. It's engraved in the party brain. Feelings come from what's mine is yours, what's yours is yours. Good friends will tell you you've only got one chore. And if you have a happy wife and you've got a happy life, don't forget it, you regret it, then you burn like the hellfire. Just don't forget it, you regret it, then you burn like the hellfire. Now don't forget it, or else you regret it. Then you burn like the hellfire.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.